Hello, I'm Paddy O'Donnell, and this is The Cremologist from Farrow and Ball, the podcast where paint and colour meet life. My own life has always been filled with colour, and lucky me, I now work as a colour expert at Farrow and Ball, which means I spend my life exploring people's innermost dreams and using colour to bring those dreams to life.
The world is colourful. I always see life in colour.
My first memory when it comes to colour is red. I thought her dress was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen.
Every day I see the power that colour has.
Do you know, I've got glasses that fit each colour room. So these are my pink ones in my pink room. Got green ones over there. Neutral in my bedroom. Not that you're going up there, Patrick.
Why not? And that's why we've created this series, to explore how colour works in a room, but also how it works in our heads, our hearts, our identities.
There's loads of colours in that. The velvet dingles, and what we were talking about, the cracks and the crannies always go down to dark green or dark black, don't they?
I've never done my life story through colour, and everyone should do this.
So this week, my guest is Lucinda Chambers. Many of you know Lucinda through her brilliant photographic shoots at Fashion Director of British Vogue. She's also the creative mind behind the lifestyle brand Colville and the platform Collagerie, a tastemaker of the quietest order with an unerring eye of all things interesting, from clothing to textiles and art to colour. Thank you so much, Lucinda. Welcome. What a joy to be here in your amazing home. And we're in this glorious sitting room, walls drenched in kind of this watermelon pink, which I love, almost cardinal red in areas, and then this lovely blush pink in the light.
Yes. Well, it's a pleasure to be here. And yes, you're absolutely right, colours shift. And that's why, you know, it's such a joy to sort of work with colour, because they never stay the same.
They never stay the same. You know, the one colour feel different in three different planes.
Absolutely. And I'm a huge fan of the big swatch. You know, the bigger swatch, the better. You know, people put tiny little swatches up and sort of think that they
and
can...
And next to each other as well.
Well, actually, I do next to each other. Yes.
But, you're very naughty. We'll have a chat about that.
Okay, wrist slap straight away, and we haven't got even into the podcast. But no, I paint massive swatch, so much so that I've almost painted the whole room by the time I've swatched it up.
Yeah.
But, you know, then you can see what the light's doing in different times of the day. And, you know, sometimes I sit on a swatch for, you know, 6 months. And another thing I do against a big swatch is usually I know in that room one of the paintings that's going to be there.
Okay.
So I always hold the painting, like that painting over there, which is all of sort of seashells, it's 1930s. I hold against the colour of the room and sort of move it around and just see if it's talking to each other. Because colours do talk, don't they?
Absolutely.
They have conversations.
Absolutely.
Just like we're having.
So, moving into our first little section, let's begin with the first of your colour choices. And this is really one that resonates from your childhood. So if you can talk a little about that, what the colour is and why it resonates so strongly for you.
Well, it's called Charlotte's Locks. And to call it orange would be very basic. It's not. It's a kind of fabulous, on fire, burnt orange, coral, beautiful. And even though as a child we moved about 18 times before I was 17. What my mother used to do herself was to do up flats or do up houses. She'd often buy kind of quite a wreck or something that hadn't been touched since the sort of 50s or 60s. And they were always very different. You know, it could be kind of like a 60s, 70s type situation where she painted the ceiling black, she lowered the ceiling, everything was black and chrome leather furniture, the walls were white. There was always this shot of coral, and I think she must have been really drawn to that colour. So when I was thinking about your podcast, the only colour that really anchored everything together, because then we moved to a very sort of Rococo-y type flat in Cheyne Walk and a little Muse house, which was very mid-century modern, that nothing really had anything in common. And I think...
Apart from the coral.
Apart from the coral.
Bouncing through. And was that a wall colour? Was that a fabric? Was that a lamp?
It could have been anything, Patrick. It was... I remember in Cheyne Walk, it was these chairs that were super rococo. I think they were almost gold. And she upholstered them herself in a kind of coral slub.
Fantastic.
And then it was quite a tough one, because every time we moved on, we just didn't know where we were going to, you know, how it was going to end up. But literally the minute she finished a project, we sold it, and that's how, you know, she made some money. And she loved working with her hands. And I think that's something definitely that I've inherited.
You inherited all
yeah,
of that.
I love sewing. Yeah. I love, you know, I was making a lampshade this weekend. I love. Were I'm you? Very get crafty.
From what?
Raffia.
Oh, okay.
I sent off for all those colours on Etsy. You can get every single colour.
Yes, which you used to wrap presents with,
exactly.
Didn't we? About 20 years ago, we all had our coloured raffia.
And they're cheap as chips. And I thought, I'm just going to see if I can make a little
on a
tiny,
wireframe.
On a wireframe.
And that's it, just wrapping and wrapping and wrapping.
But putting the colours together, you know, that's my happy place.
Lovely. So with that coral, obviously it was a trope of your mother's utilised in lots of different ways. Do you get nostalgic when you see sort of coral, when you see it in other places?
It's interesting, actually, you say that, because I hadn't actually thought that I associated that colour with her until you made me think about it, which was a really great exercise. But oddly, the room we're sitting in is very, very like that colour. This was painted about 30 years ago, so God knows what colour this is. But it's not dissimilar. It's a warm colour, and I think for a sitting room, it's surprising in summer because you'd think it would be kind of hot and overheated and rather sort of dangerous. But actually, it's kind of just very energetic.
Yeah.
But it's also quite calming at the same time. It sort of envelops you, this colour, I think.
What's so lovely about you choosing Charlotte's Locks, which is, you know, the coral, is actually it's named after our creative director, Charlie, who has this beautiful sort of... Actually, she's more strawberry blonde.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of artistic license with that. But, you know, yes,
that's
it's just
fine.
This lovely thing about... You know, Charlotte is just a ball of energy. And so, you know, it's the most appropriate name for her, you know, energetic colour. Was your mother... I mean, she obviously sounds extraordinary, but was there this kind of burst and vitality? Was she just on the go all the time? Was she a force of energy too?
Yes, she was. She was a brilliant cook. She loved entertaining. She loved having people around. Yeah, she was
a
force of nature.
Are you quite social too?
I am and I'm not. I think I'm an introvert because I live a lot in my head, I think. I love entertaining. I love people coming around. But I also love being alone a lot just to fiddle around and play.
Oh, you're quite comfortable in your own space?
Very much so, yes. I'm a great turnover of ideas and concepts and colour and texture and feeling and what products we're going to do. And so, yes, I think it's a necessity to have very, very quiet downtime.
Okay. Because the one thing, when I crossed your threshold earlier, there are a few houses when you walk into them and they give you a hug straight away. And that's really rare to pull off. And you've done that here. So you walk in and it just feels, it's full of love and it's full of personality and, you know, because it's so textured. But there's nothing sort of contrived here. It's just, it tells a story.
That's a lovely thing to say. And I don't really set out to make something stylish. It's a bit how I dress in a way that I think if you're not comfortable, I think comfort is so underrated. But I also think homes are like that because I think a lot of people think they expose themselves, you know, that people are going to go, oh, that's really 90s or that's not in good taste.
Yeah.
Or that's not this year's colour or... I think colour does open up a lot of vulnerability about yourself. And I think a lot of people, I know this from talking to people about how they dress, is they're terrified of colour. And that's why people wear a lot of black. But I also think you can start by creeping colour.
Yeah.
You know, if you want all your walls white, that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. But you can just add a tiny pop of colour, like a yellow lamp or a pink lampshade or a blue rug. A bit like how you dress. You can dress all cream or all black and then you have a pop of lipstick or you have a green eyeliner or an amazing pair of, you know, lilac earrings. I call it creeping colour. You can just get colour by stealth, you know, introduce colour by stealth.
And it's kind of interesting
but
to say
understand.
That.
I understand the fear. Totally.
Yeah, no, and I get, I mean, I love colour and I do decorate with colour a lot myself. But I do wear a lot of navy blue. But I have this one thing, this one item, it's ancient, it's starting to fall apart, but this beautiful beaded Maasai belt.
Mm.
So I'd wear a blue shirt, pair of blue jeans, probably blue trainers, sneakers or something.
You've got the belt.
And then I have that belt and it just makes me so happy all the time.
Well,
it's such a lovely thing.
But also it's like memories and also it gives a personality.
Yeah, it's my little bit of joy.
Yeah.
Barely a surface left
stuff.
Untouched.
No, my husband once said, darling, love the house, but if there was just a place to put the coffee cup, that would be great.
Yes, where is the light relief space for hubby
there
to go?
One. Oh, no, there is. He's taken over several rooms.
I've seen pictures of your house, you know, through you and online and stuff, and it's kind of such an extraordinary feast. So we've dipped into your childhood, but moving into your youth. So we're probably looking at kind of the 70s here, aren't we? Let's hear about your second colour.
My second colour, and actually I have to say I love it, but I haven't loved a purple for probably 30 years. Because when I was young, I was probably about 17 or 18, I wore purple head to toe. And I don't just mean like just there was a purple shirt with a purple skirt. It was purple socks, purple shoes, purple eyeshadow, purple underwear, purple, purple, purple.
So we've moved, so we're not in glam rock, Bowie. We're going into almost punk territory.
Yes, it was sort of
blondie.
Punky. Yeah, multicolour hair. Okay. I had, you know, my hair was always like sort of multicolour.
You were art college at this point
as well?
I was
at art college, yes.
So
I was at art college doing foundation.
Big thing.
I don't know why I picked purple. Because
it's quite a tricky colour, isn't it? To carry
I've
off
never
full
worn
stop.
It since.
Right,
I've never
okay.
worn it since. But this colour Pelt, what I love about it is it's sort of a black purple with a bit of aubergine.
It's that kind of really, really ripe aubergine, isn't it? Or eggplant for our transatlantic
friends. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Friends.
I think it's more really aubergine lovely. Than purple.
Yeah.
And actually, fun enough, and this is not meant, I am wearing a Pelt colour sweater.
It is kind of pelty, almost marron,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes.
Marron glacé.
Oh, that makes me sound very chic. I don't know if it's chic.
Always chic.
And I love it because it's almost teetering on the brown. But the purple I'm talking about when I was a teenager was like full-on sparkly purple.
Did you do the whole big eyeshadow and everything?
Yes.
And
yes.
lips too.
And zigzag eyes.
Oh
and
my goodness, you really went for it.
Yeah. And I think I was making jewellery at the time. I was at art college making jewellery and flogging it at Camden Market. And there was purple involved in that jewellery.
Really?
A lot, yeah. It was purple and fluorescent.
I think it's one of those colours. I mean, I think it terrifies a lot of people. Well,
you love it, you hate it?
Yeah, probably.
But I wonder at what point do you see it afresh? Because when I look at Pelt, I don't sort of have a sharp intake of breath and think, oh my God, that was the colour I wore.
I couldn't use
I
that.
Actually look at it and think, that's a beautiful colour.
Yeah.
So I've obviously got over that purple aversion.
I suppose for a lot of people, they'll probably feel that almost, when you talk about purple, that almost ecclesiastical.
Oh, yes, maybe.
Robe purple.
Maybe.
Which is quite, I mean, obviously it has extraordinary symbolism, doesn't it?
Yes.
Church and royalty and everything like that, you know, sort of ceremonial robes and everything.
Mm.
But yes, I mean, something more nuanced like that, as you say, almost blackened.
Yes.
And, you know,
and
lovely sort of charred aubergine.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
So, I mean, obviously it was a thing you wore and makeup, clothing and everything. But did it carry any other kind of symbolism for you? Because purple, this is a colour of power and majesty and everything.
Just going back to my mother, she said, try everything out. Try boyfriends out, try clothes out.
How many
out,
of those did you get through?
Oh, quite a lot. you know, just try everything out. That was her absolute mantra. And I think, you know, I always remember I was at art college. I think I'd just left. I used to make all my own clothes. And both my mother and I went to art college at the same time. I was hopeless. She was very successful there and went on. But I knew that I was spectacularly untalented. But I did discover the Perspex room, and there was a lot of purple in that Perspex room. But the colours were incredible because they were all sheets of Perspex stacked up one against the other, and it just completely blew my mind. And then I learnt how to use the sort of jigger, which was the, you know, how to cut Perspex. And then I started making these earrings, and then I started flogging them. And then
from
I thought.
Coloured Perspex.
From coloured Perspex. And actually, it was a real light bulb moment because one of the pairs of earrings worked their way into a free magazine. At that time, it's handed out on the tube called Miss London. But I couldn't believe that this pair of earrings I had held and made in my bedroom ended up on a model. It seemed so...
And in a magazine.
Extraordinary,
being handed out
yes.
to people in
so
London.
Then I thought, there has to be a process, and I've got to find out what this process is. So that took me to trying to work out what it needed to work in a magazine, and everything that I would do from then on would be to do with fashion. So it really ignited, you know, something. And what really kick-started my first forays into fashion was I used to go and have my hair done free on a kind of like a model night, you know, where they would experiment with your hair, and I didn't care what the hell they did. I mean, it was absolutely multicolour, and purple was definitely involved in the ends. But they asked if I'd go and be photographed, and I was so excited, I couldn't believe it. And I was not beautiful, but I think my hair looked extreme. And I turned up at this photographer's flat, and it was Mario Testino, who is, you know, a very famous photographer. But at that time, he lived in a squat. I lived in a squat. He opened the door and he went, I knew I was going to meet you. And we started testing together and working together.
Oh, really?
Mm. But it's like colour and rooms and interior design or clothing or anything. You you've got to try things out, and then you can slowly discard or repaint or cut a shirt dress up and make it into a skirt, or, you know, you've got to experiment.
Yeah, so purple, I think, is kind of siren colour, isn't
it? It's quite
shanty. It's like, look at me.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So now we've gone kind of full circle. We're talking 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't rule out purple coming back into your life?
I think the shade that I wore, I would rule that out. Okay. I've never worn that particular shade. It's a shouty shade.
Yeah.
But this colour, I am wearing it today.
Into the lovely pelt.
That must, yeah, the pelt. I am wearing it.
Yeah,
so I'm embracing
lovely.
A sort of purple, but it's a very nuanced, beautiful brownie yeah. purple.
It's the grown-up. It's the 30 years
Maybe.
Old purple.
Yeah. yeah. If you can imagine, the whole room was graffitied because I've got three sons, so they all lived in the graffitied room. And then this is the opposite of the graffiti, which was so jaggy and kind of loud. And so this is sort of calm peignoir from Farrow & Ball, and then light blue, and the floor is painted, and I can't pronounce
it. Did you do the floor?
Yes. I did it sort of every weekend, and I just took my time and painted one coat after the other. I love these colours, and then sometimes I just sit here and sit in the rocking chair and in the bright orange chair and have
and
a
that's
look.
That's so beautiful. So that's almost like your Charlotte's locks bouncing it's back,
so
isn't it? A little bit.
Absolutely right, Paddy.
Orange slash coral.
It's absolutely right.
It's a pop, isn't it?
It's so a pop. Because sometimes that's all you need, the vital pop. Colour is vital.
It is vital.
And vital means life.
So, Lucinda, we're just going to move on a little bit. Have you had a thought of your defining decade and the colour that defines that too?
I don't have a defining decade. I don't know how one would kind of benchmark that, whether it's the time that you were happiest or the time that you were most excited about getting married or a career change
yes.
or path. What I feel really fortunate, without sounding smuggy boots, is there has been huge changes. You know, I did a job that I loved for many, many years, you know, for
that
25
was
years.
Fashion director
and that
Vogue.
Was fashion director of Vogue.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved that. Did I think I'd go on and have another career after that? I never even thought about it. Do I think now I'm the luckiest, you know, chap alive? Absolutely, because, you know, you have an idea, you have a partner, you don't know where this idea is going to take you, and it takes you on a kind of another incredible journey.
Yeah.
So I don't think I'm afraid of change.
Are you an optimist, do you think?
Oh, definitely.
Are you?
Oh, definitely. I never really worry about things. I think something will come up because there's always
so
change, you know? And
good for
and
you.
Change is, actually, I always have this sort of saying in my head that change is good, even if it's for the worse, it's for the better.
Yeah.
And that really, that's my mantra, I think, is that, you know, you think catastrophes happened, but change makes you sort of change. And I think that's never a bad thing, really. And even if change is forced upon you, that's good as well. You know, things never stay the same. Does anybody think, oh, I'm totally in my comfort zone, this is where I want to be for the next 10 years? I don't know. I certainly know when I'm absolutely over the moon with excitement because of something or other.
Yeah.
And it has usually involved colour, actually, I have to say. Colour or a husband or, you know, or a child. But, you know, colour's definitely up there and projects. But
yeah.
I think a restlessness is perhaps something that does go with creativity and a sort of curiosity. And if you're always curious about yourself and about what makes you tick, then I don't think you're probably ever going to say, yeah, you know what, I'm totally in my comfort zone.
So going back to less so the defining decade, but your third colour choice is this sort of workwear blue. And I know you referenced our colour, and you probably can find it in your book there, called Pitch Blue.
Yes, beautiful colour. It's a very particular shade, but
there's
well,
a softness to it. It's not a cold blue,
well, because
is it?
It's washed. And
yeah.
I think this blue is exactly that, because actually I'm alive with excitement when I see a rail of clothes in a car boot and it's all French workwear, because it goes from kind of the deepest, deepest sky blue to the palest blue, depending on how old they are and how much they've been washed. And there's a particular sort of timbre to this blue here that I'm looking at.
Oddly, almost a little bit of lilac. So kind of, you know, there's a little pull of that
there
purple
is.
Family
yes.
again, isn't there?
Yes. But this blue totally signifies happiness to me, because it represents holidays. We've got a very higgly-piggly farmhouse just outside Toulouse. And it's a place where I never work. It's a place where Not that I don't love work, but it represents holidays, friendships, family. And it's where, you know, we just get to play and eat and drink and have fun, and there's, you know, friends come and stay. And it's a very, you know, you see a lot of that workwear down there, and that colour is just beautiful. I've actually never used this in
So it's not a decorative colour, it's just
for me, it's about clothes,
clothing, possibly even the sky, you know, to a degree.
Ceramics.
Maybe, yeah, ceramics.
I think ceramics are that blue. I've got a beautiful blue jug that's in that colour. It's a really happy colour. If you were to paint a room that colour, what other colour would you put that with? Because I've never...
I'm a massive fan of blue and green together. So
love that.
I love blue and green. So
which,
I would put
which
like
in
a
our
really
parents
deep
say
emerald
blue and green should
something.
Never be seen.
Yeah, but it's
wrong.
So strange because
no
they
rules in
always
colour.
Work beautifully
Isn't
together.
That interesting? Because actually our hall, it used to be painted an absolute kind of like vagina pink. It was a shocking pink. Shocking. And I remember once coming back from a trip, and it's only when you've been away and you come back and you think, you could have looked at it with slightly fresh eyes.
Right, okay.
And it had a stripy carpet going up the stairs, and it was very, all very shouting hello. Very energetic, but quite overwhelming. And I thought, I actually want to put my key in the lock and come home and feel calm. So I used blue on the top, and then I drove our lovely painter mad because I asked him to put a thin black line.
I saw that lovely black line almost at chair rail height. It's really beautiful,
isn't it? Labour of love.
Yeah.
And then I wanted the bottom sort of shiny because of all the kids' bicycles. So it's brown and it's like a minstrel suite, which is very triggering for me because I'm a chocoholic. So every time I come in, I think, oh, I must go to the co-op and get a bag of minstrels. So what I wanted, and this sounds a bit odd, I wanted it to look like a German urinal. I wanted to go from the kinky pink to something so the opposite of kinky pink that was sort of calm and grounding. And so it does look a bit like a German urinal, but it is very calm. And it is a very calming blue.
And pitch blue is kind of really interesting because the origin of the name, when Farinball became the Farinball that we know now in the early 90s, all this beautiful kind of backstory and narrative behind each colour name. So some people might go, oh, your names are absolutely ridiculous. But there is a very legitimate story behind every name. So pitch blue is actually based on the idea of pitch tar used on roofing and everything, even though it's probably softer in tone and kind of our perception of a more blacker pitch.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's the origins of the pitch blue colour. So moving on, your colour of now. So here you are. You left your position at Vogue. You set up Colville. You set up Collagerie. It can be based on lots of things. Kind of you're at peace with where you are. You're already happy creatively where you are now, or just a colour you've kind of recently discovered. So what is that colour?
Well, the colour I've chosen is Bancher, and it's the most beautiful kind of smoky green. And I suppose if I was to be kind of pinpointed at pain of death and say, what's your favourite colour? I probably would say green, all shades of it, really. But Bancher is lovely because it's dusky and it's nuanced and it's just beautiful, really. And so I wear a lot of green and I paint a lot of green around the house. So I guess it is my absolutely favourite colour.
Greens have so many positive energies. You know, they're calming, they're relaxing, they bring serenity. And that's especially at this moment. I mean, the world feels really messy. There's a lot of white noise. And so we all need that kind of calm, that tranquility, that almost safe space. So green delivers that really rather well, I think, for a lot of people.
Yes. I mean, I think also, we haven't really touched upon this, but I think it also depends what you want from a colour. You know, whether you want it to energise you, whether you want it to calm you, whether you want to be... You know, our dining room, for instance, is painted kind of electric yellow because it's kind of very energetic. But this green, you're right, Paddy, it feels grounded and obviously earthy and calming and can be interpreted, I think, in lots of different ways. I mean, looking at it now, I mean, you could put a fabulous lilac with that, or you could put a tobacco with that, or you could put black with that.
Well, actually, it's really interesting because when we introduced that colour, which I think is about 5 years ago, so Bancher is a relatively new colour. The name is a reference, like matcha, sort of Japanese tea. So you got that lovely, almost, there's almost like an olive note, almost acidic olive note to it. It's really beautiful. There's this kind of lovely sort of energy. So have you used Bancher.
Not yet.
Do you think you will plan on...
Yes, because
what does it mean to you? I mean, because like we talked about greens being calming. Obviously, it's quite a strong green. It's quite a dark green. Does it have any emotional resonance?
I love wearing it. I mean, I think I wear a lot of green because I think my eyes are a bit sort of green, mud colour, khaki. Green is, like most people, a lot of people wear black. And I wear green as a sort of base... It's almost like I see green as a base camp.
Right, okay.
You know, it's my base camp where other colours can spring from. Like today, you know, there'll definitely be green involved, but then I'll wear an orange parka or something, you know, to throw it off. So I think green is a really good base camp, calm, neutral, grounding, fabulous place to start.
So, dearest Lucinda, it's now time we gift you a colour. And the one thing I think you need to take away with you from us, we have this beautiful, optimistic colour. Yellow.
I'm so touched.
But you are an optimistic person. I think yellow has that lovely energy. And you said you have your dining room downstairs. So we have this wonderful colour called babouche. It's a babouche of those lovely Moroccan slippers. So in honour of that, in honour of your positivity and energy, and summers in France, no less, with those lovely skies, we're gifting you babouche, but it's being rechristened as Lucinda's slippers. So
that's amazing.
We have this little sample pot made for you. So thank you very much. It's been absolutely fascinating. You're a star.
Paddy, thank you so much for asking. And it's an absolute pleasure to talk everything about colour because it's my very happy place. And I'm so touched about the colour because, again, it represents sunshine and sunflowers and energy. So I'm absolutely thrilled and honoured. Thank you so much.
You can find the lovely Lucinda on Instagram at Lucinda Chambers, or do go and visit her platform at Collagerie. You can also follow us at Farrow and Ball. Do come and say hello, and if you've enjoyed the conversation today, please share it with the people you love. The Cremologist is a Farrow and Ball and Feast Collective production. The producer is Sarah Cudden. And that's the last episode for this series, folks. Until the next one, goodbye, big hugs, and lots of love.